Truth Seeker. All right, never mind. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Happy Labor Day 2011. Huh? You know what's missing today, right? Hey, this hour is sponsored by Terrace. And the message is to Boris from Bell River, Ontario. Happy birthday, Boris. We hope you continue to feel rotten for many years to come. Well, they have the same last name, so I guess it's okay. Terrace is sponsoring this hour, and the message is to Boris Natishak from Bell River, Ontario. Happy birthday, Boris. We hope you continue to feel rotten for many years. That must be a joke, right? Thanks, Terrace. And Boris, happy birthday. I don't hope you feel rotten. So this is Labor Day. It's difficult to even talk about labor anymore, right? Although I did like seeing what's his name, the labor union leader in Detroit speaking on this from the same podium that Obama was speaking from, calling somebody a son of a bitch right up there on the podium. That was pretty cool. That was James Hoffa Jr., I believe. Just saw a little clip of it. I've tried to immunize myself from any kind of news for the past 3 days. 3.5 days, actually. Went down on the Georgia coast and damn near got blown into the ocean last night. Oh, it was a lot of fun last night. Oh, my God. Yeah, bad storms. We were on an island off the South Georgia coast, Tybee Island, and weather got pretty weird. 2 o'clock in the morning, and then on the drive back to Atlanta today, we drove right into tornadoes all over the place. I'll tell you, man, this weather, boy, it's just absolutely. I mean, it's like a box of chocolates, right? You never know what you're going to get. Every single day, it's different. Every single day, depending on where you live, too. Texas is still on fire. There's going to be nothing left in Texas. Nothing. It's just burning to the ground. And even though I retch when I think of Rick Perry, see what I mean? I still feel sorry for a lot of Texas people. Your state is not going to stop burning. You understand that. Somehow Perry opened up a double hole, a demon hole, a portal. He did. Rick Perry opened up a portal into hell, and some demons got out. And he's going to burn your state until there's nothing left to burn. And I really do hate it. I'm watching the news tonight, all the families that are fleeing, and people are being burned out, and you know, it's really sad, but it's happening because Rick Perry is a devil himself, and he opened up a portal, a demon portal. Christians know about that. Christians know all about demon portals. Of course, they think that gay people open them. No. It takes a real disciple of Satan like Rick Perry to open up a demon hole, a portal. What was missing today? You know what was missing today for the first time in 45 years. Anybody want to take a guess? You want to take a guess? Go ahead, guess. Anybody? Today, Labor Day. What was missing today? All weekend, as a matter of fact. Jerry Lewis telethon, huh? The muscular dystrophy telethon. You try saying it. Telethon. The John Wiener writing at the Nation just hit it. Bullseye. He said the problem with Jerry Lewis telethon over all those years was not that he tried to help people with muscular dystrophy. No, the problem was the way he did it. The telethon, sure, it raised a lot of money, hundreds of millions of dollars, I guess, over the years. But it perpetuated those destructive stereotypes. Jerry's message was simple. Crippled children deserve pity. His critics offered an alternative. People with disabilities deserve respect. And every year, right, the same Jerry Lewis shtick, parading little kids in wheelchairs across a stage in Las Vegas, right? Making his appeals for cash and people showing up and standing there with him, giggling and grab-assing and crying. And there's Jerry claiming to be a friend of the doomed. Now, here, one of the ironies, the pitch, if you remember, I don't know, did you ever watch it? I might have watched it 30 years ago, but the pitch was always for Jerry's kids, right? Jerry's kids. Even after the telethon was over, you go into a convenience store or a bar someplace, you'd see one of those cans sitting there with a slot at the top, put money in for Jerry's kids. The fact is that two-thirds of the clients of the Muscular Dystrophy Association are adults. And they didn't like to be called Jerry's kids. Oh, come here, roll your little chair over here. Come over here and get close to Jerry. Hi, what's your name? Look, he's all crippled up. Oh, this is awful. We gotta find a cure. Let's get Dean Martin out here.
Strangers in the night.
Come on, Dean. All that money, as John Wiener points out, all that money was supposed to find what Jerry Lewis called a cure. And every year he would say, we're getting closer to a cure. But just about anyone in the medical profession or the medical arts will tell you the same thing. There is no cure to MD. In the program for the 2011 annual meeting of the Muscular Dystrophy Coordinating Committee, the word cure, according to John Wiener, does not appear. What people with that particular disability or physical challenge need is help with their symptoms and with mobility. They also need things like accessible public transportation and housing, employment opportunities, and other civil rights that a democratic society should ensure for all the citizens. End quote. That's what Mike Urban says. He calls himself a renegade Jerry's kid, who was an official telethon poster child in the 1960s. But isn't that true? I mean, yeah, that program used to make me insane because it was always so forced. It seemed so forced to me. I never watched it with somebody in a wheelchair, but I can guarantee you that the people I know who over the years who are dealing with the neuromuscular diseases never thought that the program was worth a goddamn. I mean, they didn't like it. It was embarrassing. It was demeaning. It was denigrating. And there were jokes that people not in wheelchairs wouldn't necessarily get a chance to hear. But there were jokes, self-deprecating jokes, that sometimes had more than a little bit to do with Jerry Lewis. There are some highlights here of, in 1973 from the Jerry Lewis telethon. I've got four of them. We got a break? Okay, let's do a break. I'm going to come back here. Four highlights or lowlights from the Jerry Lewis MD telethon over the years. Oy. Are you going to talk about this, Malloy? No, just this first little bit. the hour. Yeah, we're talking a little bit here about what was missing this Labor Day, and that was the seemingly never-ending, interminable Jerry Lewis muscular dystrophy telethon. Remember, it used to be on major networks, and then it shifted. I think it finally wound up on, I don't know, the Travel Channel or something. It was just awful, remember? But the demeaning way that it was all handled, and a lot of people who deal with muscular dystrophy and other neuromuscular diseases started to react to this, what, about 15, 20 years ago, back in the 90s? 80s? I don't know. But all of a sudden, there was this backlash, and I can remember, I didn't pay that close attention to what Jerry Lewis was doing. Come over here! Roll over here! Come here! You know, I didn't pay that much attention to it until the backlash began. And then I started with, you know, what is this? There's a bunch of ungrateful people where here's this Hollywood star trying to raise money. And, you know, I paid attention a couple of years to the telethon. Oh, my God. A couple of highlights. In 1973, Jerry held up a child with MD and said, God goofed. And it's up to us to correct his mistakes. Look here. Yeah, that actually happened. 1977, Jerry Lewis nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize for his humanitarian efforts. He was nominated by Representative Les Aspin, Democrat of Wisconsin. Yeah. 1983, Ronald Reagan got in on the act. Photos show him posing with Jerry Lewis and the official muscular dystrophy poster child. The kid's in a wheelchair. He's only 6 years old, but they dressed him up in a three-piece suit and a bow tie for the occasion. Remember that? I remember that.
Now, come here. Put on this coat. Put on the tie. That's good. Now, look. There's President Reagan.
Yeah. 1986, Jerry responded to critics. When a female writer for the Montreal Gazette described his performance as hyperactive, dated slapstick, Jerry Lewis told the press,
When they get a period, it's really difficult for them to function as normal human beings.
You know, because the writer was a female.
Oh, my God.
And I agree with John Wiener here, who wrote this for The Nation. The worst moment of the telethon came in 1972 when John and Yoko appeared. Yeah, they did. I didn't see it. But apparently they played Imagine and a reggae version of Give Peace a Chance. But they were there for a political reason. Remember Dick Nixon, the last great liberal president we've had in this country. Nixon had been trying to deport them for about a year, you know, because they were peace creeps. I think it was about Lennon, Smoke, and Reefer or something, but because they were peace creeps. And even though Nixon was a liberal, he was really mentally disturbed. So he did the murder thing, not to the extent of Dick Cheney, but, you know, he was getting close. So anyway, they're trying to throw John and Yoko out of the country. So they go on the Jerry Lewis's telethon, and they were that desperate to stay in the U.S. So to prove they were deserving of being residents here, they stopped hanging out with Jerry Rubin and started hanging out with Jerry Lewis. Oh, God. That's why John Lennon told the telethon audience,
Jerry is one of our favorite comedians.
Oh, really? Now it's over. No more Jerry's kids. About time, huh? Oh, my God.
Wasn't there a couple of years ago when he made some horrible joke on the air about this is my retarded brother or something, and then he corrected himself and said, no, and people just kept chalking it up to, he's just exhausted, he's been up 30 hours,
poor Jerry.
Pills are running out.
Yeah, poor Jerry. Yeah, it was... I don't know. It was just too bizarre. And then when Jerry Lewis got sick And I guess he was taking, among other things, I think he was taking prednisone. And he, you know, he just, his whole body got so distorted and he was so weak and unable to function. And he would still do those shows. And it was like, oh, please, you know, please stop. Somebody stop this. Somebody pull a plug somewhere. A cure for muscular dystrophy. Like a cure for cancer. Right? Man, the things we do. Okay, one last nail in the coffin of Barack Obama having any pretense of being a liberal. And I hope some of the so-called liberal or progressive talk show hosts in radio and television caught this over the weekend. We'll be right back. Before the hour, this hour is sponsored by Taras Natishak. Am I saying that right? And the message is to Boris Natishak from Bell River, Ontario. Happy birthday, Boris. We hope you continue to feel rotten for many years to come. What is that? I don't know. I don't write them. I just read them. Thanks for the sponsorship, Taras. And Boris, happy birthday. Ay, ay, ay. I'm sure it's all in good fun, right? So, Saturday just passed. We're sitting on the beach at Tybee Island off the coast of Georgia, and it was a pretty intense surf. It was really rocking and rolling. And Molly and I were out boogie boarding, what we call boogie boarding with the little surfboards. You know, you catch a wave and not standing up surfing, laying down surfing, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, having a great time. And a lot of people on this beach, Tybee Island. They get people from South Carolina, Georgia. So after a while, we come out of the water and go back up where we have our umbrella and our chairs and everything. And Kathy had gone to buy some soft drinks or something, came back. She had a copy of New York Times, and she's standing there pointing at this article. I'm walking up, you know, with the kid out of the water, and I can see Kathy in the crowd. She's pointing at a story on the front page of New York Times. And, you know, I get up close, and she says, any doubts left? And I take a look at it, and I go, oh, my God, there it is, right on the front page of the New York Times. Leslie Kaufman, the writer, there it is. And I, you know, I've grabbed a paper, got it all wet, and I'm reading it. I'm reading this thing, and we had made a deal, you know, no politics, no nothing, no TV, no CNN, no MSNBC, nothing. The only thing we're going to read are magazines in this little house we rented, and they were from 2005. You know, House Beautiful and Golf Digest or whatever. And some little beach publications, but you know that's what you do, right? And the last thing I ever want to do when we take off, whether it's a weekend or a week, is to watch CNN get anywhere close to news. Otherwise, why go, right? So she just couldn't resist, though. Had to spend $2 and pick up a copy of New York Times and bring it down to the beach. Well, what are you going to do? You know, you've been married almost 15 years. What are you going to do? But there it was, and I just wonder how many so-called liberals and progressives now are going to keep defending Barack Obama, who is out bushing Bush. Hello, wake up, people. Wake up, people. Obama on Friday trashed his administration's plans to tighten smog rules. And as the AP puts it, bowing to the demands of congressional Republicans and some business leaders. I mean, do it again. He did it again. How many times now has this guy rolled over? I mean, it's incredible. Obama overruled his own EPA and the unanimous opinion of the EPA's independent panel of scientific advisors. And he directed his EPA administrator, Lisa Jackson, to withdraw the proposed regulation to reduce concentrations of ground-level ozone, which is smog's main ingredient. After the Republicans and the capitalists said to him, "Hey, Mr. Ha-Ha President, bring your ass over here. No, you come here. Okay, now, dump that smog thingy you're going to try to get Lisa to enforce as part of an EPA rate. No talk, no back talk. Drop it." And he did. The announcement came just after a new government report on private sector employment showed that businesses essentially added no new jobs in August. And at the jobless rate remains around 16%. Don't believe that 9.1% crapola. The jobless rate is around 16%, and stay there. It's going to stay there. It's not going to change. Not with this president. Aren't you looking forward to Thursday night to hearing the garbage talk, huh? The jobs plan, huh? If Boehner and Cantor let him do it on Thursday, he was going to do it Wednesday until they told him, no! Back away from the podium, Mr. Ha-Ha President. And he did. Of course he did. He always does. The withdrawal of this proposed regulation about ozone, smog, the withdrawal marks the latest, I love the way the AP puts it, in a string of retreats by Obama in the face of Republican opposition. Last December, he shelved his insistence that the Bush-era tax cuts should no longer apply to the wealthy. Earlier this year, he avoided a government shutdown by agreeing to Republican demands for budget cuts. This summer, he agreed to more than $1 trillion in spending reductions, with more to come, as a price for an agreement to raise the nation's debt ceiling. He got a deal on something that no deal is required. Oh, my God. And now, this. The problem with this, aside from the fact that it shows that this man has no leadership qualities at all, except those that dovetail with the demands of the Republicans, the hard right Republicans and the capitalists, he has no agenda. He does what he's told. He does exactly what he's told. The ground level ozone standard is the one most closely associated with public health. Huh? Something that Obama said he wouldn't compromise. Remember? Obama the candy had never come. Ozone is the main ingredient in smog, which is the lung irritant that occasionally forces cancellation of school recess. Causes asthma and other lung ailments. Oh, trust me, I know about it. I live in Atlanta, which is the smog fart hole of America, right here. This is it. So Obama just okay. What? I can't do that. You don't want me to do it? Okay. So you know what? What is he supposed to do? Call Lisa Jackson in. Lisa, call in the panel of experts. Experts, I changed my mind. What? Yeah, the Boehner and the rest of Republicans and the capitalists told me I can't do this. But no. Now I'm going to show leadership quality here and just tell you, Lisa, that this is it. My word is my word. Oh, you're showing leadership on me, your EPA administrator? Yes, Lisa. Now don't become insubordinate. Oh, okay, Mr. President, whatever you say. So there you have it. Kids, childhood asthma, hell, adult onset asthma, it doesn't make any difference. Childhood asthma can't, and now meanwhile, Michelle Obama, I think, is still working on the healthy kids thing, you know, get the kids out to exercise, get them off fast food, right? Get them outside, get them running. While her husband says, look, I want to continue to allow the capitalists and the Republicans to destroy the air that kids are supposed to breathe. So, Lisa, I want that regulation canceled. Go cancel it. And so she did, and so he did. Oh, and on the realization that it's never enough, a spokesman for House Speaker, the ever-orange John Boehner, a spokesman for Boehner had what the AP refers to as muted praise for the White House, saying that withdrawal of the smog regulation was a good first step toward removing obstacles that are blocking business growth. Huh? Everything these cockroaches want, everything these Republican vermin want is labeled blocking business growth. So we want children to continue to die before they reach age 10. We want to continue to kill children in foreign countries. We want to kill our own with breathing problems, respiratory problems. Mr. Ha-ha President, get rid of the smog requirement. Get rid of it now. Get your administrator for EPA in and tell her that this is not going to happen. Do you understand, Mr. Ha-ha President? Yes, I understand. Now, let's see what happens tomorrow when all the liberal and progressive talk show hosts show up for work and see if they talk about this. Before the hour, so Barack Obama does it again. I mean, this is just as regular as tornadoes and fires in Texas, right? Every time the man turns around and has something, some little thing that people who want to see the country survive feel they can get a hold of. In this case, to tighten smog rules. To have the EPA issue tighter regulations than what Bush had every time. As soon as the Republicans find out what he's going to do, they order him to heal. Mr. Ha-ha President, stop this nonsense right now. Okay. Now. Okay. And then after he does what the Republicans tell him to do, and what the capitalists tell him to do, after he does it, then they bitch slap him.
After he stands there and says, okay, I'll do it. I'll pull those regulations. Lisa, pull those. Then they turn around and slap his face. Boner says,
yeah, well, okay. You know, it's a good first step toward removing obstacles. But, you know, we have to stay on this guy's back all the time. You know, every time we turn around, he's, you know, trying to do something that we don't want him to do. And we have to step up and knock him around a little bit. You know, it's only the tip of the iceberg when it comes to stopping Washington Democrats' agenda of tax hikes and more government stimulus spending and increased regulations. We're still all of it making it harder to create more American jobs. So, you know, we just have to we have to continue to grab this guy and let him know he's on a very short leash right now. He's going to be a one-term president. He made his history. All right, everybody knows he made his history. Okay, now you know, just don't do anything. And when you try to do something, you know, I hate this. What Obama had initially set out to correct was a weaker standard set by Bush. And Lisa Jackson had said back in July, according to the AP, that the standard set out by Bush couldn't survive a legal challenge because it didn't follow the recommendations of the EPA's scientific advisors. You remember when, I remember when this happened. And not just this, but Bush had assigned a Christian religious advisor, more or less, a political advisor to every single agency in the government. And that person's function was to make sure that science was thrown in the gutter. Any decision had to be made based on either the Bible or capitalism, sometimes both together. But for goddamn sure, there was to never be a decision based on science. Never, ever, 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 ever. And now Obama is doing the same thing. In March of this year, the independent panel of scientific advisors said in a letter to Jackson that it was unanimous, this panel, in its recommendation to make the smog standard stronger, and that the evidence, the scientific evidence, was, quote, sufficiently certain, end quote, that a range proposed in January 2010 under Obama would benefit public health. You see, Obama came up with the idea a year and a half ago, right? Okay, folks, this is what we're going to do. And we're going to do this because we want to make it easier for children to breathe. Not just children, but, you know, I'm not talking about Jerry's kids here, also adults. We want people, plus it's the right thing to do. And so Boner and the capitalists and the Christian crazies let this go. Ah. He thinks he's going to get this. All right, just let it go, let it go. Right up to the end, and then we pull the rug out from under him, which is exactly what they did. So, once again, Obama is summoned before the people who run the country. Mr. Ha-Ha President, what do you think you're doing? Tightening the smog standards because science says to do... No, you're not. Oh. Okay. The withdrawal of this proposed EPA rule comes 3 days after the White House, that was last week, identified seven such regulations that the White House said would cost private businesses at least $1 billion each. Remember, this is Obama doing his capitalist impersonation, right? Huh? Where he says, well, we found seven regulations that will cost $1 billion each. The smog standard was estimated to cost anywhere between $19 billion and $90 billion, depending on how strict it would be. But the Clean Air Act, the one that was signed into law under our last liberal president, Richard Nixon, the Clean Air Act, I think it was Nixon, doesn't allow the EPA to consider how much it will cost to comply when picking a new standard. And besides, the savings
in avoided health care costs and hospital visits would probably offset whatever so-called goddamn costs are involved here several times over. George Karpinski, the president of the League of Conservation Voters, said, quote, "The Obama administration is caving to big polluters at the expense of protecting the air we breathe. This is a huge win for corporate polluters and a huge loss for public health," end quote. Well, of course. What, I don't know why the League of Conservation The League of Conservation Voters, like you and I, had thought that Obama was really, you know, going to be a bit progressive, or had on the top of his agenda concern about environmental issues, right? How does it feel to once again be slapped in the face by this man? If you want to call in, the number is 877-996-2556. This hour is sponsored by Maggie, who writes in her message, F-16s with solar panels on its wings? I think not. Destroy other countries in the pursuit of oil? It's not for us, the people, it's for them. Yeah, I think we get what she's saying. Thanks, Maggie. Regarding Obama just keep in mind who his big time business advisor right now is, Jeffrey Immelt, the head of GE, who's the largest, arguably the largest polluter on earth. Could it be GE? Certainly in the top five, General Electric. So when Obama orders his Environmental Protection Agency administrator to back off on a rule that he had put together, you got to wonder, is Barack Obama insane? Is he schizophrenic? I mean, this is a legitimate question. I'm not doing like we used to do with George W. Bush. Bush was a half-ass. But Obama has a brain. Obama's a smart man. So what does it mean when Barack Obama, a year and a half ago, says, you know, we're going to tighten down on these smog standards, these ozone standards, because it is causing diseases, and the billions of dollars that are having to be picked up by Medicaid and Medicare and uninsured people who go to emergency rooms. We got to do something. Plus, it's the right thing to do. And a year and a half later, after his science panel puts together the recommendation that says, yes, this is a good thing, and you need to do this because the science is behind this. And if you don't do it, there's going to be more death, more sickness, more disease, more children who can't breathe. And Obama gets a report and then says, no, I changed my mind. And you got to wonder what made him change his mind, you know, just for a brief moment, until you realize that he didn't change his mind at all. that Barack Obama is a shill, an absolute shill for capitalist America. That's all he is. I don't give a goddamn what he says. I don't care how he talks. Oh, I admit, I got sucked in. Absolutely got sucked in. Got sucked into the rhetoric and the body language and that faraway gaze. You know what his faraway gaze is starting to remind me of now? You ever notice that when he stands up there, he's got that faraway gaze like he's looking at the future? You know what that reminds me of? Some of you remember back during the bad old days of the Soviet Union, they had posters, workers' posters, and all the workers were all healthy, and they all looked very, they didn't look Slavic, they looked very Aryan. Do you remember this? And the posters were up, and they'd be written, of course, Russian underneath them. I have no idea what they say, onward workers or something, but they all had that faraway look in their eyes. You remember that? Anybody? Anybody remember those? Somebody? Please? That's what this man reminds me of, those people on those posters. Because the people on those posters, first of all, I don't know if they were just artist renditions or if they were based on real, you know, posed workers. But they had a look like, please don't disturb me. I am in a transcendental moment here where I am not connecting to my miserable, horrific life under Soviet communism. I'm posing for a poster. So leave me alone, please, please, please. That's what the faraway look in my, I'm looking toward the future when the entire Soviet Politburo are all dead and gone and the Soviet Union is free. That's what I'm looking toward. Now, they want me to look as though I'm looking to the workers' future. There is no workers' future. Certainly not under Russian communism or Soviet communism. But I'm doing this. That's what Barack Obama's faraway look is reminding me of. Next time he gives a speech, I'm not talking about when he's looking into a teleprompter or television cameras. They all use teleprompters. That doesn't mean anything. When he's looking at a television camera, I'm talking about that. No, no, no. Or when he's addressing a joint session of Congress, I'm not talking about that either. A little bit in there. But when he's in front of an audience and he has that look like in his face, on his face, in his eyes, of there's a glorious future coming. There really is. As soon as you get my ass out of office. But there is a glorious future coming. If you people would ever go social Democrats, if you would ever go democratic socialism, you have a glorious future. But as long as I'm in office, or any Republican, or pretty much any Democrat, you're doomed. You're absolutely, totally doomed. So get wise, vote for somebody like Bernie Sanders or Ralph Nader or somebody like that. Of course, Nader is so old, he remembers when about Mount Vesuvius erupted, so he knows all about ozone problems. But you're going to have to vote for somebody other than a Democrat or a Republican if you ever want to, you know, be free. In his statement regarding the withdrawing of this regulation, he said that his action did not reflect a weakening of his commitment to protecting public health and the environment. Can you believe this? See, this is what I'm talking about. This is where it crosses the line from you know, the old models on the Soviet posters into real Soviet Union newspeak. This is how they used to do it. This is what he said, quote, "I will continue to stand with the hardworking men and women at the EPA as they strive every day to hold polluters accountable and protect our families from harmful pollution," end quote. That's what he said as he told Lisa Jackson not to add to the EPA regulations this rule about smog, about ozone, about ground level filth and murderous lung ripping poison. Even though the science panel advising the EPA said to do it and do it as quickly as you can because people are getting sick and people are dying. So Obama says to Lisa Jackson, no, 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 kill it, kill it. I don't want it. No, no. Lisa Jackson, now the EPA administrator, didn't Christy Whitman resign after her first term because she disagreed, as much of a right winger as she is and was, she disagreed with the craziness that Bush was doing. Here's Lisa Jackson's chance to show the world that she too has some standards, some moral standards, some ethical standards. And what she should do, obviously what she should do, if she wants to declare those standards, is to resign, to get out of this administration as quickly as she can. Her science panel said to her, this is what you have to do. Her president said to her, this is what I want you to do. She put the two together. She comes up with the solution, and then Obama smacks her right across the face. It says, sit down and shut up. The capitalists and the Republicans have told me what to do, Lisa. Sit down and shut up. And then he says, I will continue to stand with the hardworking men and women at the EPA as they strive every day to hold polluters accountable and protect our families from harmful pollution. Jesus Christ. And you thought it was only Republicans who could do that? That kind of gibberish double talk? That kind of newspeak crap? And Boehner says basically the same thing.
Well, it's only the tip of the iceberg. Step in the right direction, but withdrawal of the smog regulation, that's one thing, but there's a whole bunch of other things. We got to get rid of everything. We got to destroy everything. We're working on Obama. Don't worry. We got Obama. We got Obama by the short hairs. Trust me on this. Between Jeffrey Immelt and me and Eric Cantor and the capitalists and the Tea Party, we tell this sumbitch when to take a breath. And how much smog is going to be in the breath he takes. Yeah, we do. That's what we tell him. But tomorrow, tune in to all your favorite liberal and progressive radio talk show hosts and see how they defend this one.
Ready for Radical Talk Radio? It's Mike Malloy.
Take my hand. 21 past the hour. Break my stride. It's just so irritating. It's irritating to have a president who has turned out to be such a Judas. Such a betrayer. And he's doing it incrementally. And it's the old frog in the boiling water, boiling pot of water syndrome. It's just astonishing, though. Action after action by this president. One after another. Displays a total disrespect for the people who voted him in. That's why the Republicans got control in the midterm elections, and that's why the Republicans are going to win this time, unless there is a challenge from the political left. I really do not believe that Democrats are going to vote for this guy again. I don't. And if they do, then they deserve to continue to be slapped across the face every time this man has a chance to make a decision, this man being the president, make a decision that will benefit, in this case, everybody, but in other cases, the working class, the middle class, the right to collective bargaining, organized labor, all that stuff. He has betrayed every single thing. I will make the question that I've asked several times. Is there any demonstrable truth that this guy cares a goddamn about the middle class or the working class? He makes wonderful speeches. He really does. He's very inspiring, and it's all an act. And that, I guess, is what infuriates me. Bush and Cheney and the rest of those monsters were pretty clear. There was no doubting that we were dealing with incipient and then actual war criminals. people whose disrespect for human life was boundless. That they there was no respect whatsoever for anybody's life. Nobody's. Just flat out mass killers. Every single one of those sons of bitches. Even to the point of jerking around the Constitution, twisting, bending the rule of law to fit what they were doing. And it was murder. And it was theft, grand theft. And it was in violation of every agreement that the United States has signed since the Nuremberg trials, where it concerns conduct, international conduct, whether it's conduct in war or conduct regarding treaties and agreements. The Bush crime family just disrespected and spit on everything, everything, everything. And then we have Obama, who makes a big show about he's going to come in and clean things up. Right? We should have known when Nancy Pelosi, the heart and soul of the Democratic Party during the dark old years of the Bush crime family, when Nancy Pelosi says the war criminal is free. All the war criminals are free. We're not going to do anything to the war criminals. Nothing. We're not going to talk about it. We're not going to discuss it. We're certainly not going to pursue it. There will be no investigations. The war criminals are free. We are going to assist them in their disrespect of every single international agreement that the U.S. has been party to since the end of World War II. We're going to assist them. All the talk, this is Pelosi, all the talk during the Bush years about the crimes they were committing, it was nothing but talk. So then we have Obama and the fawning of the political the political left, the professional political left. You know who I'm talking about. Fawning over this man like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Now, I and several people on the so-called liberal left during the run-up to the Obama administration exposed Obama and Hillary Clinton's records. And we just said, here, you know, take a look. And, of course, we were Dennis Kucinich. And I'm not using the royal we. I mean, a bunch of us. We were Kucinich supporters. And laughingly, our second choice, laughingly now, second choice, another lion son of a bitch, laughingly, our second choice was John Edwards. And the default position was, and I remember saying this all those years ago, Jesus, what was it, four? I remember saying, you know, vote your heart in the primary, vote reality in the general. I mean, what are you going to do? So we did that. So many people did that, hoping that we weren't going to get screwed again. Bang. I don't think he was in office 10 minutes before he brought the hammer down. And those of us who understood what we were getting when we voted for him were suddenly vastly outnumbered by those who refused to understand. And that means just about everybody else on the professional political left. You know who I'm talking about. They're on radio. They're on television. They are the liberals. They are the Democrats. So they call themselves. And tomorrow morning, most of them will continue to tell you that Barack Obama is doing everything he can. That Barack Obama is really a progressive Democrat. And I just wonder, between the lies from the left and the lies from the right, where in the hell do you find truth? Sponsored by Maggie. whose message, F-16s with solar panels on their wings, I think not. Destroy other countries in the pursuit of oil. It's not for us. It's not for us, the people. It's for them. Yeah, we certainly understand that. Thanks, Maggie. I'm just about finished with this Obama thing and this ruling. It's astonishing. John Walke, Clean Air Director of the National Resources Defense Council, said the ozone decision is, quote, like a bomb being dropped, end quote. Mr. Walke and representatives of other environmental groups saw the president's actions as brazen political sellouts to business interests and the Republican Party. The question for environmentalists is what to do now. Mr. Walke, the guy with the Environmental or Natural Resource Defense Council, said, quote, there is shock and awe here, or shock and chaos here. So I do not know. I can't answer that question, end quote. The first thing you can do, pal, is start to organize a campaign to replace Barack Obama with a democratic socialist. That's the first thing you can do. You have the organizational skill and the backing and the money, unlike those of us to hang out around this 25-cent radio program every night. Why don't you do something, Mr. Walke? Why don't you put the word out that you finally had enough of this phony? I will continue to stand with the hardworking men and women of the APA as they strive every day to hold polluters accountable and protect our families from harmful pollution. That's what the president, President Haha said after he ordered Lisa Jackson to drop it, let it go. Now, the decision, as pointed out by the AP, mirrors one made by Obama's predecessor, Bush. EPA scientists had recommended a stricter standard to better protect public health during the murderous reign of the Bush crime family. Bush personally intervened after hearing complaints from electric utilities and other affected industries. Personally intervened. What's that, science in here again? Get the science out of it. So his EPA set a standard of 75 parts per billion, stricter than one adopted in 1997, but not as strong as federal scientists said was needed to protect public health. You know, scientists, these dirty, rotten scientists, they're like the dirty, rotten poets and the dirty, rotten artists. The dirty, rotten scientists are the same. You know, they just get in the way of progress, don't they? Huh? They really do. Or regress. Progress, regress, it doesn't make any difference. The EPA under Obama, back in January 2010, proposed a range for the concentration of ground-level ozone allowed in the air, from 60 parts per billion to 70 parts per billion. That's it. Remember, Bush said 75. The scientists said it has to be much, much lower. So Obama says 60 to 70. Lisa Jackson, Obama's environmental chief, said at the time that, quote, using the best science to strengthen these standards is a long overdue action that will help millions of Americans breathe easier and live healthier, end quote. Well, honey, that was then. This is now. That was back when you, apparently, and a lot of people thought that Barack Obama was serious about having people breathe easier and live healthier. Look, Barack Obama's a cigarette smoker. What do you want him to do? What do you want him to do, Lisa? Jesus, God. The American Lung Association, which sued the EPA over the Bush standards, said it would continue its legal fight now that Obama is endorsing an even weaker limit. The group has suspended its lawsuit after the Obama administration vowed to correct it. You know, the Bush, the battle of Bush stuff. So, That's all. You know, why do I bring this up? I guess because I shudder to think what it's going to be like during the second 4 years of a Barack Obama administration. I mean, if you're going to have a Republican president, why not go all in and get somebody like Rick Perry or Mitt Romney or Michelle Bachmann or Herman Cain? Why not? I mean, they, did you think, oh, Mike, Supreme Court, Mike, Supreme Court, don't forget Supreme Court, Mike. First thing they'll do is overturn Roe v. Wade. Oh, that's right. Okay. So I, you know, once again, I'm just curious as to what it will take for so-called liberal or so-called progressive talk show hosts on radio and television to stop the delusional games and start informing their audiences, all of whom are much larger than the audience to this program, by the way, start informing their audiences of the truth. Do you think that'll happen? You know who they are. Do you think the time will come when these folks will say, okay, mea culpa. I've held on now for 3 years trying to believe this man, hoping against hope. He's finally put the last nail in the coffin. That's it. End of story. Barack Obama is a corporatist. He's a capitalist. He's a coward. He's a liar. He's a warmonger. He's just as bad as Bush, only worse. Because Bush never made any promises that involved sane, sensible action. Bush would come around and tell you, yeah, I'm crazier than a loon. Yeah, goddamn right. I'm going to do all this. I'm going to rip everything to pieces. Yep, that's what I'm going to do. I'm the decider. So holding him responsible would be like holding a four-year-old responsible if the four-year-old goes on a rampage through the house and, you know, smashes dishes and overturns the cookie jar. What are you going to do? Bad boy, go to your room. But Obama? Obama, who tried to present himself as the friend of labor, a friend of the environment, a friend of science and logic and rational governance and reasonable actions, were a concern not just, you know, his Democratic base, but also he was going to be reasonable where it concerned the other side of the aisle. Remember all that? You're going to reach out. Every time he's reached out, they've reached out too with the hand grenade with the pin pulled. But Obama just keeps doing it. I guess he figures if he continues to kick us, who are us, the American people, if he continues to kick us enough, he'll finally get the approval of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the capitalists who now run the government, run just about everything. They run the military. They run the Supreme Court. They run the legislative branch and the executive branch. And I don't know what the hell else they want. I mean, what is there left for you predatory sons of bitches to take? What? What is it that you're so damn bound and determined to pry loose from this dying country? What is it? What do you want? What in the hell do you want? But Mr. Obama, you have been just a monumental disappointment. You really have. I just wish you'd go away. I don't hate you the way I hate Bush and Cheney and the rest of the mass killers that operated this country for 8 years and destroyed this country. I don't hate you that way. You just turn my stomach the way most cowards do and the way most hypocrites do. Mr. Obama, Mr. Ha-Ha President, what a shame. Oh, well, I'm only one out of 330 million. I'll tell you what, you give your speech Thursday, Mr. President, really, just bear down, get that Soviet poster look in your eyes, stare off into the glorious future So the future is red. Stare off into that, that glorious future with, you know, the chin lifted. You know, he's got that down, doesn't he? The chin lifted, just like the posters. I mean, go online, do Google, click images, ask to see some Soviet Union worker posters. Take a look. There it is. It's there. Lifted chin, looking to the future. Wonder when we're going to decide we've had enough.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling. Like your father always did.
Go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Maggie, whose message is F-16 with solar panels on his wings. I think not. Destroy other countries in the pursuit of oil. It's not for us. It's not for us, the people. It's for them. Maggie, thanks for the sponsorship. I appreciate it. Where were we? Oh, yeah, Kurt is in Beaverton, Oregon. Hey, Kurt, thanks for holding on.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I was wondering if you loan out that ice pick of yours.
Yeah?
Because after hearing the news clip at the top of the last hour and hearing a clip of Obama shouting to his audience that as long as he occupies the White House, he'll stand up for collective bargaining rights.
Yeah, right.
I needed that ice pick.
Yeah.
I really did. I don't know where he was, you know, with his eloquent speech last winter in Wisconsin when that's exactly what was going on.
Yeah.
And here's a serious question. I was reading John Nichols' book, The S Word, about socialism.
Uh-huh.
And it tipped me over the edge. I'll have nothing to do with the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really interested in trying to somehow get going into politics, whether it be local dog catcher or whatever. But I want to be part of this Democratic Socialist Party. But I'm having the devil of a time trying to find any actual resources to connect to. You know, I've been Googling, there's the Socialist Party of America,
right.
The Socialist Party USA, the Democratic Socialist of America, the Socialist Equality Party. You know, I don't know who's crazy and who's legit.
Well, do this. There is one self-identified socialist in the U.S. Congress, and that's Bernie Sanders, who's an independent from Vermont.
Yep.
Go to Bernie Sanders' website. Establish communication with him via email. I'm sure if you say to him what you just said to me, that he would respond and give you the kinds of links to websites that you may need to know about. You have to be careful. We live in a crazy, crazed culture where you know, you can go online and find something that says the American people's blue skies, sweet smelling grass organization. And what it is a front organization for some uranium miners, mining companies. So you have to be very, 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 very careful. There are socialist organizations that present themselves as being democratic socialists, and they're not. They're totalitarian. So it's sort of like the old Soviet Union. But I think a good starting point would be Bernie Sanders. Go to his website. If you do a Google or a internet search on Bernie Sanders, it'll come up with his website. Go there and check out some of his resources. Check out what he's talking about, because he is the only socialist in the U.S. Congress.
I've already decided that I'm going to write him in whether he wants to be president or not.
There
and
you
I
know.
Hear that more and more and more from people, because they've had it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But,
well, you know, when it gets to the point where there is no alternative left in providing a way out of a drift toward utter and absolute totalitarianism, that's one of the events that will cause people to take to the streets, and when it starts to get kind of bloody.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I know you don't do guests very often, but I would love to hear you talk to John Nichols about that book he wrote. It's about the history of socialism in America.
Yeah.
None of so-called left or liberal people will even interview him about that book, because it's still too radical to even discuss. And you are just spot on with what he's talking about in this book, and the history, and being Labor Day. The socialists gave us Labor Day because they gave us the unions. They just don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, well, that's a good idea. That's a good idea, Kurt, and I'll ask Kathy to go ahead and book John Nichols. We can get in touch with him through The Nation, I'm sure. And we'll do it. You're right. We don't do guests very often on this program, but Nichols would be a good one. He would be an excellent person to put on.
You have a great evening, Mike.
All right. Thanks, Kurt. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate it. Yeah, let's do that, Kathy. Let's get John Nichols on the program. Huh? You just wrote yourself a note. Okay. All right. We will do that. Mike is in Detroit, listening on Sirius. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How about you?
Pretty good. Listen, I just been listening to your show the last few weeks, and a lot of what you talk about is stuff that I've been reading about over the last few years regarding the North American Union. And a lot of the elements that you speak about is a lot of this stuff that's going on that mainstream media doesn't put into that context, and yet I think through incremental stealth, things are moving in that direction. You've already got the European Union, and the same blueprint used to create that is being imposed upon here in U.S., Canada, and Mexico. And by the way, for your listeners that don't know what the North American Union is, it's to merge Canada, Mexico, and the United States into one big super state with harmonized administrative laws and economy and so on. That's a general.
Well, if I might interrupt, Mike, because we've got a break coming up here. I'm familiar with that, but I think it's an utter impossibility for a couple of reasons. First of all, for all intents and purposes, Mexico is a failed state. It's become a narco state. The only way it could be roped into a union with the other two states of North America would be through force, a tremendous force. It would take an invasion. It would take hundreds of thousands of soldiers. That's not going to happen. The second thing, Canada is no more interested in joining up with a failed United States or of Mexico than they are with cutting their own wrists. So that's just not going to happen. It really isn't. Mike, thanks. I appreciate it. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program on Labor Day 2011. Okay, one more thing about Obama. I know you're sick of it, but what are you going to do, right? I could sit here and tell you all night what a great president he is. Last hour we were talking about the EPA thing, all right? San Francisco Chronicle on Friday had an article about Obama still has not issued an executive order, even though they drafted one earlier this year, that would demand, remember this, that any contractor seeking to do business with the federal government disclose campaign contributions of more than $5,000 that their leaders make, that these corporatist bastards make. Very simple. You want to do business with the government, show us any contributions you've made over $5,000, your corporate, your executive board, your people. We want to know what your political leanings are if you want to do business with the government. If you don't want to disclose it, fine, don't disclose it. Just go stay in the private sector. You know, you capitalist bastards are always talking about how bad the government is. Why do you want to do business with the government anyway? But we know that that's just bat squeeze when you say that. You want to suck as much of the tax dollars as any community organizer who struggles to try to get food into the bellies of poor school children. We know what you capitalists, what you corporatists are like. But anyway, if you want to go ahead and continue to suck tax dollars out of the spigot that seems to forever be flowing, then all right, fair enough. Just let us know what your political inclinations are of your executives, your big bosses, over $5,000. Very simple. Now, according to the Chronicle, an order like that from Obama could blunt the power of that Supreme Court decision that allowed corporations and labor unions. Oh, yeah, let's not forget the labor unions. Okay. Allowed corporations to make unlimited anonymous contributions to independent groups that then turn around and run political advertisements. Conservatives have taken great advantage of that Supreme Court decision. In 2010, in the federal races nationwide, according to disclosure forms, conservative groups that didn't have to disclose their donors spent $121 million on election-related advertisements, while liberal groups spent $12 million. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. A spokesman for Obama, somebody named Adam Abrams, said the draft order is still undergoing review. The president is committed to improving our federal contracting system, making it more transparent and more accountable. He believes the American taxpayers deserve that, and that's why he's asked Congress to pass a full disclosure law. Yeah, but in the meantime, all Mr. President Obama has to do is just sign an executive order. If you want to suck money from the public trough, now, of course, we know you don't, you capitalist pigs. You never do. You always say you don't. But can't, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. If you really want to, all righty. If you have executives or corporate folks who make more than a $5,000 contribution to a political operation, we want to know what it is. Very simple. Now, if that's too intrusive, okay. You don't want corporate, you don't want public money anyway, you corporate predators, so go away. People who know say congressional action is unlikely because the Republican-controlled House opposes the order. In July, a couple of months ago, Representative Tom Cole, a Republican from the rapidly burning and dying state of Oklahoma, introduced an amendment to prevent disclosure, to prevent the corporate capitalist thugs who want tax money to prevent them from having to disclose any $5,000 campaign contributions that their leaders make. And Tom Cole from the burning and rapidly disintegrating state of Oklahoma said such an order would lead to a significant politicization of the federal procurement process, or what Tom Cole called pay to play. Jesus Christ. Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's good, Tom. Like, that doesn't already happen. Oh, my God. And John Yoo, remember him? I love this. The Chronicle, which is a good paper, but the Chronicle has this sentence, this article. Listen to this. UC Berkeley law professor John Yoo, writing recently in a legal journal published by the Conservative American Enterprise Institute, said the order, quote, opens the door for retaliation against those not supporting the administration politically, end quote. Berkeley law professor? I wonder if it's any relation to John Yoo, the George Bush, Dick Cheney operative who wrote the rule saying it's okay to torture people. And the Chronicle identifies him as a UC Berkeley law professor. That's it. UC Berkeley law professor. Oh, well, but I digress. The focal point here is not the Chronicle. The focal point is the fact that the Obama administration, once again, could order anyone who wants to do business at the public trough. And, of course, we all know, I mean, listen to Michelle Bachmann, listen to Sarah Palin, listen to the Republicans, listen to Rick Perry. They don't want anything to do with us, dirty goddamn federal government, right? We don't have anything to do with you. Look at the governors of the various states run by these neo-Soviet leaders who have said no to stimulus. We don't want your money. Okay, fair enough. I mean, okay. But when your goddamn state is burning to the ground, or when floods are wiping out your infrastructure, then it's okay, right? Then it's okay to suck at the public trough, right? And it's also okay to suck at the public trough as long as you don't have to disclose where your political sympathies lie. Oh, my God. Don't you just see the Koch brothers' filthy hands on all this? Capitalist America's filthy hands in everything. Is there anything left that they don't corrupt? Anything? Anybody want to send me an email or tell me what that one thing would be that capitalism in this country has not totally destroyed and or corrupted? And pick anything. Our social safety net, our political system, our military structure, our educational system. Pick anything and show me where it is free of corporatist influence and or control. There's your assignment. Simple assignment. Isn't that simple to do? We're at 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556. Give us a call.
1,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Anyone past the hour, our good friend Patty out in North Dakota with, among other organizations, Code Pink, just sent me an email for the guy who called in, and I'm sorry, I've forgotten your name already, my bad, wanted to know about democratic socialism and where to go, and I suggested Bernie Sanders. Here's a website for you, DSA. That stands for Democratic Socialists of America, DSAUSA.org. DSAUSA.org. You got that? DSAUSA.org. And Patty, thank you. Democratic Socialists of America, DSAUSA.org. All right, back to some phone calls here. Jeff is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Not bad. I'm thinking we form a new party. Goldman's been talking about this, called a majority party. And we can get Jesse Ventura. And you ever heard of John Fetterman? He's the mayor of small town in Pittsburgh. He's became mayor, did some work there. They're both about 350 pounds, about 6'4", 6'6", and they could take little twerps like Eric Cantor and the men of Fetterman and pummel them until they sign the pills they want them to do, or stick their face in the toilet and flush it until they
Wait a minute. Self-governance is not like middle school, even though it seems that way sometimes. This crew we have in there now.
Well, I heard LBJ used to take those guys in there and hold them up and smack them around until they'd sign what he wanted. So, I don't know. I'm just voicing my displeasure over those congress critters.
A little frustrated, I think, like most of us, right?
Yeah, I know, but we do need some kind of, maybe not go that far, but we do need to form another party, I think, to split and to bring this more to the middle, at least to the middle.
Well, I don't want to go anywhere near the middle, Jeff. I go back to.
I want to go to the left as far as we can.
Yeah, I remember Jim Hightower said, who I don't have very many heroes, but I think Hightower would qualify as close to one, along with Molly Ivins, and they're both from Texas. But Hightower said famously that the only thing you find in the middle of the road are dead armadillos and a yellow line. And, and as far as Jesse Ventura, I mean, he's a very interesting guy, and there are several things that he says politically that I agree with, but there are several things that Ron Paul says politically that I agree with. But once you get past those couple of things with Jesse Ventura or Ron Paul, you find just a whole bunch of crazy, you know what I'm saying? Jeff, thanks, man. I appreciate what you had to say. Yeah, and it's the crazy part that disturbs me. I would not really want to have a political organization that, well, never mind. Just whatever. No, Ron Paul, Jesse Ventura, I'll pass on those two guys. They're pretty much, I think Jesse Ventura pretty much has the same political structure inside his head as Ron Paul. I don't know. I'm just guessing. But I think we already have a political party structure available. And it's the one I just talked about, the Democratic Socialists of America, DSAUSA. I mean, it's there. Forming a political party is... it's going to require, first of all, if you want to do that, if a person wants to do that, okay, go ahead. The Tea Party is not a political party. It's a fringe element of the Republican Party. I don't think there has been a new political party put together in forever. I mean, what, at least a century or more? I'm just guessing here, but... And the reason is that the two dominant parties, the Democrats and Republicans, have made it virtually impossible to form a third party and get it on the ballot. Ralph Nader came the closest with the Independent Party. The Greens have come close. But just like, what's his name? George Wallace was really a Democrat, even though he ran on Independent Party credentials. So it's very difficult to do, if not now, impossible. So what do? Give up? No, of course not. You can work within the structures already in place with democratic socialism. The problem here is going to be with the word socialism. Americans just get all shivery and start to lose their balls anytime they hear the word socialism. And it's because of negative reinforcement. The kind of thing that they did to what's-his-name in... never mind, I'm getting lost here. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Before
the hour, Joel is in Berkeley, California, listening on Green 960. Hello, Joel.
Hey there, Mike. How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thanks. Hey, I'm not sure if you were asking this seriously or not, but John Yoo, the torture lawyer, and John Yoo, the UC Berkeley law professor, one and the same.
Right. No, we know that. I was trying to inject a little ridiculous irony in the fact that this creep is still teaching. Of all places, Berkeley. I can't get my mind around that. He's making statements about what I quoted him as saying, that indirectly what he's saying is too much power in the hands of the president is not a good thing. From John Yoo. right. So it's astonishing to me. What I don't understand is why the Board of Regents, I don't know who makes a decision in California to keep this guy on University of California, Berkeley, but whoever makes that decision, what is the objective here? Is it to demonstrate that Berkeley can hire war criminals as well as people who are not war criminals to balance out the curriculum? I don't get it.
I don't get it either. I've participated in demonstrations outside his home. It's a very nice place, by the way.
I'm sure.
Lovely views of the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco Bay. Yeah, he's living nice.
Mm-hmm.
There have been letters, there have been petitions to the administration of the law school and everything else, and of course they're just stonewalling. I don't know what their objective is either, but they're clearly not going to do anything about it.
I can understand if you're on faculty at the University of Chicago, and how that whatever faculty organization or whoever does the hiring and firing, not faculty, but I can understand how University of Chicago would kind of stonewall or just ignore any petitions or demonstrations. But University of California at Berkeley, it's just astonishing.
I know we have this reputation as being the birth of the free speech movement, but the administration of the university has never, ever been friendly to any of that stuff.
Well,
not to my knowledge. I was an undergrad here, and
it's one thing not to be friendly. It's something else again to be an enabler for war criminals to provide them with an employment. For God's sake, we gathered up people like John Yoo in Germany and put them on trial. You know, and in this after World War II, and in this country, We gather them up and give them tenured law professorships or something. It's just...
He's been there since 93. They probably just have to get up and mutter the academic freedom magic incantation.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, thanks, Joel.
Hey, thanks. All right.
Appreciate you checking in. Yeah. Where did Ken Starr wind up? What's the other California institution? It's a private institution. Oh, it doesn't matter. Janie? Is it Janie in Placerville, California?
Yes.
Hi, Janie.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I believe the university that Ken Starr ended up was Pepperdine.
Pepperdine. Thank you.
Yeah. I wanted to go back to the comments that you were making about Obama, that he's, you know, a capitalist and a corporatist and all the other comments that you made. And I have to say that I agree with you completely. Having said that, though, the other thing is, you know, if progressives and people like you and me bash Obama, it just gives the other side more ammunition. And I can't imagine what will happen if, God forbid, somebody like Rick Perry should get in. It would be so much worse.
How would it be worse, Janie?
Well, you know, I think women's rights would be much worse than they are now.
I want to hear what you got to say, but I want you to be specific. When you say women's rights,
choice. Specifically,
you mean a woman's right to privacy?
Right.
Okay. I hate that term choice because that gives the other side ammunition. That's why they come up with bumper stickers that say it's a life, not a choice. Roe v. Wade had nothing to do, with abortion. It had everything to do with a woman's right to privacy.
Right.
The fact that abortion is a private woman making that decision with a physician and hopefully the other person who may have helped her get pregnant, that is a very private matter. And the Supreme Court ruled that people have a right to that kind of privacy. So, but if that's what you're talking about, yeah, fair enough. I would say that Roe v. Wade is going to be overturned soon, no matter who is president. As far as Rick Perry or as far as women's rights, is there another one that you think is under immediate threat? I mean, that would be under threat if Perry were someone like Perry were elected president.
Oh, I think that corporatism would take a huge step forward. Right now we're seeing the tar sand issue come up and
We're talking about women's rights here.
Well, you asked me for other issues.
Yeah, other issues for women's rights because Obama is already. His EPA or his State Department has signed off on it. Obama is going to sign that. Obama's not going to stop that.
I know.
So well, okay.
So the question then becomes: okay, what do we do? What do we do? Because I can't see myself.
Well, here's what I think we being rational Americans, what we need to do is to deny support to a man who is no different from, and in some instances worse than, George W. Bush. We've got to stop looking at his handsomeness and his youth and his race and his D after his name and say, wait a second, the man is betraying every single reason that we voted for him. Every single reason. It's only going to get worse. Now, as far as the Rick Perry is concerned, if Rick Perry, which I don't think he will ever be president, if he were, then the country will go into open revolution. And then we get this settled for once and for all. And yes, there will be a lot of pain and suffering and destruction, but we're heading that way anyway. I don't think that the American people are stupid enough. We are very stupid. We are very ignorant, but I don't think we're that stupid to elect someone like a Rick Perry or to even allow him to get the nomination. Because let's face it, once these thugs get the nomination, the electoral system also has been totally corrupted. Uh-huh. So, to me, there is a way out of this, and that is to refuse to participate in the system that got us here to begin with. I mean, if we're going to continue to participate in the very system that produced a Barack Obama, that produced a George Bush, that will produce the next one, if we're going to keep participating in that system, then how can we legitimately say we don't like the system? That's to me. Now, I don't know, Janie, to me, that doesn't make any sense. If it means there's going to be a period of disruption, political disruption in this country, however long that period may be, well, so be it. We are already in that period now. I mean, how could things be any more disrupted than they are now?
I have a hard time arguing with you on that, I do have another suggestion for us, and I don't know whether, you know, it's a viable one or not, but the way I approach it is I say to myself, you know, I would love to join the Democratic Socialist Party. I agree with them more than I agree with the Democratic Party these days.
Mm-hmm.
However, the reality is that there are two parties. They are in power, and how are we going to influence what we've got in place? And my solution would be that the Democratic leadership, which the progressives throughout the nation can influence, we can influence Nancy Pelosi, we can influence Harry Reid, and we can sit them down and say, look, if you want us to support Barack Obama, then we need some concessions. We need some promises here.
Okay, wait. Not to be argumentative and not to be challenging of your position. When has that ever happened? When?
Never happened, but nothing like this has ever happened before.
But what makes you think that Nancy Pelosi, and I hate using her, but she was the Speaker of the House.
Right.
When the Democrats reassumed control of the House and had the power to, 2 years early, stop the neo-fascist policies of Bush and Cheney, and Nancy Pelosi, her first statement was, there will be no impeachment hearings. Even hearings, keeping in mind that impeachment is only an indictment.
Well, you have to remember, too, that we were on the honeymoon. We thought we had elected a progressive president.
No. I'm talking about when Cheney and Bush were still in power and the Democrats got control of the House. Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid have made it very clear that they are not going to take those steps necessary to implement a progressive or liberal agenda. They're just not going to do it. So when you talk about applying pressure to a Pelosi or a Bush or I'm sorry, a Pelosi and Obama, boy, is that a Freudian slip, or what's his name, Harry Reid, I think what we're doing is fooling ourselves. It's not going to happen. So that means abandoning the Democratic Party, abandoning the Republican Party, and going to work, if necessary, within the structure of the Democratic Socialists of America. That's the best answer I can give you, Janie. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you checking in. Before the hour, this is the Molloy program. Paul is in Canton, Georgia, listening online. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
Pretty good. Did those storms get you tonight?
Bad rain, but we didn't get any tornadoes here. A couple miles away, there was one.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Yeah. Two quick things. One is the fascism has arrived in Great Britain, where they were doing, you know how they had the protests a couple weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
they were worried that there were going to be more protests and crimes during the big carnival they have there, the biggest one in Europe. So they did preemptive arrests of people they thought might cause problems.
Mm.
You know, people didn't even do anything yet, but because they thought they might, they were arresting them already.
I missed that one. That was in the UK? That was in England?
In England, yeah, in London.
Hmm.
The big, I forgot what it's called. It's like a fair. I forgot what the name of it is there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you want to talk about it or not, but I had one small theory to add to the 9/11 thing.
Yeah.
People were always saying, like, well, how did, you know, about the buildings coming out, how did they get the explosives in the buildings? My theory is that when Yousef Ramzi tried to bring it down, they were worried that those buildings would come down one day, and I think when they did the repairs on the building, that's when the explosives were put in the building, that they ever had to bring them down, they could bring them down at any time. And
the original assault back in, what was it, 91?
Right.
93, the Trade Center, where there were 7 or 8 people died in that one, wasn't there?
Right, and I have a feeling that's when the explosives were put into portions of the building and left there in case there was an emergency, and for some reason they had to bring the buildings down. And that's what was used, I think.
Huh.
Worked on those buildings for a long time.
I'm just trying to think, what would be the emergency that would require bringing those massive structures down, A, B, to do it in the heart of Lower Manhattan, to bring down two massive buildings like this? Oh, my God.
Well, my thinking was that, you know, if things would have worked the way they should have, that building would have collapsed sideways and would have taken out, you know, 20, 30 other buildings.
Oh, I see.
So my theory is that they would have, if there was some reason to, they could have probably brought it down upon itself, causing some destruction, but not, you know, 30, 40 square city blocks.
Oh, I see. I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah. Well, that is interesting. Idea. I mean, it certainly makes as much sense as anything else I've heard. You know, none of it makes perfect sense. All of it makes some kind of sense. Again, all people have to do, if they think any talk about 9/11 outside the borders of the official story is nuts, just go read about Operation Northwoods. That's all you have to do. It's all there. It's almost like Operation Northwoods was used as a blueprint for what happened on September 11th, 2001. It's scary as hell. What's an interesting idea. Paul, thank you. I appreciate you checking in, man.
Bye.
All right, take care. Steve is driving in Indiana. Hello, Steve.
Oh, hi, Mike. I'm enjoying your program. I'm glad I got on.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, I wanted to call. I've spent 25 years on Wall Street. I'm a recognized expert in finance, and I've devoted my life to teaching financial literacy to people. And I wanted to try to connect the dots on something you said, because I'm fascinated by it, frankly. It seems on one hand, you don't really trust government, which I don't, so we would be in agreement on that. But on the other hand, under this what you call democratic socialism, that gives the government an awful lot of power over the economy. And I'm wondering how you justify that and how, in your mind, that would work.
Well, in the first place, I don't distrust government. What I distrust is people who wind up in government and who abuse the whole idea of self-governance. There has to be some type of government in order for people to survive. A government, to me, is simply how we organize ourselves to take care of ourselves. I'm not anti-government at all. As a matter of fact, I think government, when used effectively, by effectively, I mean to the benefit of the people that put it in place, it's a wonderful instrument. But all I have to do is go to Democratic Socialists of America website and quote this for you. They have a Q&A section. Doesn't socialism mean that government will own and run everything? And the answer is, democratic socialists don't want to create an all-powerful government bureaucracy. We do want big corporate bureaucracies. We don't want big corporate bureaucracies to control our society either. Rather, we believe that social and economic decisions should be made by those whom they most affect. Now, it goes on and on, and there's plenty of information there. But as far as government owning stuff, I think that's a red herring. I'm not saying government should own anything. What I'm saying is it should be publicly owned. There should be a public ownership. That means ownership by we the people, and I think it should be true at the very beginning in five key industries: banking, energy, healthcare, transportation, and the production of weaponry. And that last one is to eventually be eliminated. And then small businesses and family-owned farms and ranches, high-tech firms, all sorts of startup businesses should be left alone, as long as no labor laws or environmental laws are violated. And who enforces those laws? Well, that's where government comes in. Government has to be two things to me. It has to be the organizing principle that we use to survive, A, B. It also has to be the enforcer of last resort. If I decide under any form of government to come and take your house, who is it that stops me? Well, either you with a gun or government. Steve, I got to leave it there. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you checking in. That's it for us tonight. I'll see you tomorrow night, all right? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.